Shavua Tov, everybody. Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Mem Chet. And we finished the perek, and we are ready to begin the next perek, 23rd perek, perek Shoel. So before we begin, let's just note that there are two issues that are going to be very important for us to keep in mind here. Remember that we're continuing on with the post Rabbi Eliezer de Mila Masechet, in which what we want to look at is the way in which it's possible to live within all of the dinim of Shabbos without its affecting the things that we need to do in order to be mechabed Shabbos properly, and in order to deal with the things that we must deal with in life. And so we had a series of dispensations and of advice about how to go about dealing with things. There's another very important issue, and that is, remember that there's a mitzvah, as Yeshayahu says, mimitzocha fatzecha, look at Shabbos, don't be involved in chavtzecha, vidaber davar, and don't speak things that you would normally speak about in chol. So that means there's supposed to be a totally different approach to your experience of Shabbos and your experience of chol, and therefore the way that you respond to Shabbos is the way that you respond to chol. So that would mean you can't do business on Shabbos. So I understand that. No business. Can you bring a gift to a rabbi? That's a different shaila, whether that's called business or not. Not so pashut. I think the rabbis have their own approach to this. But in any event, there certainly are inyanim that seem to border on doing business, but in reality, they're absolutely necessary for Shabbos. I mean, what if somebody needs something and he needs to, engage in give and take because he needs to buy it on Shabbos, he needs to borrow it on Shabbos, whatever it is that he's going to do. I mean, these are things that are part of, usually, mitzorch efzecha, but over here they're part of your tzorch Shabbos. So then we have to take into another consideration. It's all very nice to say, okay, but I'm only being osik in Shabbos, and therefore there's no problem of doing business, right? That's true. But what about the issue of the iser malacha called ktiva? So in the same way that we found that we had all of the problems of refua linked to one very simple tolda of a malacha, which was essentially techina, and that was shechika samamani, and out of that came so many different issues that involved us in the Masechet and are part of our constant Shabbos awareness, the same thing is true about another malacha, which is ktiva. And one of the important elements of ktiva are all of the gezeiros derabanan about the type of things that generally lead you to ktiva. Now, obviously, the type of exchanges that you have on a business level are very, very deeply involved with writing because of records and the concept of keeping records. And so because of that, there's bichlal a gezeira against doing things on Shabbos that could lead you to write, because these is normally the way that you deal with these things. Therefore, what do you do when you actually do need to engage in business? You need to be able to get something on Shabbos that you don't have, and you need. Says the Mishnah, Shoel adam michavero kadayayin v'kadayshemen, ubilvat shelo yomar lo halveni. So the Rabbanan made a takana. The takana is like this. You can go about your business, and you can borrow things on Shabbos, which you intend to return later. And as we'll see, you can actually use the same approach to take something on Shabbos that you're pretending you're borrowing, but you're going to pay for after Shabbos. As we'll talk about where it's a tzorech mitzvah. So there's one thing, however, that we want to make a distinction of, and that, again, has been very, very much part of this entire part of the Masechet. It's called, remember, Uvda Dechol. We had three different dargas and different elements of Uvda Dechol. And the reason that Uvda Dechol is so deeply connected to this piece is because the concept of Mimtzoch Efzecha V'daber Davar is almost exactly Mechayavas, the idea of Uvda Dechol. Be careful not to act the way that you act during the week. Oh, so it's not simply what it is that I say that I bedover, or what it is that I'm looking to do that might not have to do with Shabbos. But even acting in a way on Shabbos, and we've seen this so many times already now, that wherever it's possible to make a shinui, to do things in a way that will remind us that a Shabbos won't allow us to forget all of the takonis that we have that are possibly lead to forgetting, one of the most important of those takanas is Uvda Dechol. And so therefore, in order to avoid any sense of what I would normally do when I would borrow something in the week, and as we learn from bitter experience, when somebody borrows a book to read, you write down the name of the borrower, because otherwise you never see the book again, right? So, I mean, that's pretty standard. So what exactly, how do we avoid that kind of issue on Shabbos? So Chazal made a takana. And the takana is never say, I want to borrow. Only say, I want to borrow. Now, of course, that's a problem because in English, we don't have two words for borrowing. And because of that, the Rishonim deal with the question, okay, so what are you supposed to do if you only speak English or most other languages? Remember that in Lashon HaKodesh, we have two completely different ideas for what in English goes by the word borrowing. One is called She'ela and one is called Halva'ah. She'ela, there's two different elements in them. She'ela is something that you use where you want to borrow an item and you intend to return the same item, and it usually is in the sense of a short-term event. So lend me your pen would be hash'ileni. But if you want to take something long-term, especially where what you're taking is not meant to be returned in its form, so let's say if you would say, I want to borrow a bottle of milk, it's understood that that does not mean you're going to be bringing the bottle of milk back after you drink it. So the point of borrowing a bottle of milk really means I'm buying the bottle of milk from you and I'm going to pay you back with an equivalent bottle of milk. For that word, we would never say shoel. The word that we would use would be to be milave, to lend in the sense of lending cash or an item that you don't intend to see again. So that would be halveni. Therefore, what we do is we make a takana. Always, whatever it is that you're doing, forget about what you're really doing, but pretend that you're talking about shoel, and you're not talking about halveni. Now, as the Mishnah Berurah brings in English or in other languages that don't have the distinction, what you should say is give me, let me have. And that way, as we'll see in the Gemara, it's the very fact that you need to avoid the word that relates to business, because of that, it will remind you. So it's essentially a memory device, which boils down to a shinui and to avoid an uvda dechol. Now, the same thing would be true about a woman who's going to a friend and she needs to borrow a couple, maybe a loaf of bread or something, right? Or two challahs for lecha mishnah. Fine. Now, what about if the guy who is lending doesn't trust him? And therefore, he would actually want to have some kind of proof. That would generally lead to writing. So therefore, what you can do is you can leave something, take off your watch and leave it there, or leave your talus in the guy's house. That way he feels confident that he'll get it back. And then you can work out the deal of say mo cheshbon li'achar ha-shabbat. And of course, you can't say, I'm giving this to you as a mashkin either, because that would also be. So what we're talking about over here, obviously, if it says, osa imo cheshbon li'achra shabbat, make a cheshbon, so work out what the deal was after Shabbos, then obviously there was a deal. In other words, you really bought something even. And that's okay. Because as long as I did not talk about it, and I pretended that I'm just borrowing it, and it's going to be coming right back in its current state, even though we both know that that's not the case, as we'll see in the Gemara, the very fact that I need to watch my tongue and make certain that I present it differently is at least a safeguard, certainly not a guarantee. We'll see there are other problems involved, and against writing. Now, the same thing with true. Let's say it's Erev Pesach. You're in Yerushalayim. Erev Pesach comes out on a Shabbos, and you need a Korban Pesach. So what in the world are you going to do? So if you forgot your carbon, were unable to get a carbon pestle, lost your carbon pestle, and you're going to have to buy it on Shabbos, so then what you do is you're meniach talito etzlo, and you take your carbon pesach, and then after Yom Tov, osei mo cheshbon li'achar Yom Tov, and then you'll be able to be the first day of Chol HaMoed, you'll be able to work out what it is that you owe him. Okay, so now the question is, I mean, this is a little bit far-fetched. I mean, look, if you take a look at the signs that go up about people who are looking to rent, borrow, they don't even know how to use the word properly. Very often, people will say lahaskir instead of liskor, liskor instead of lahaskir. They have no idea what they're talking about. And they will often use the word halveni instead of hashileni, and vice versa. So Amrle Rova Baruch Chan Labai, I mean, what kind of business is this? Mashna hashileni, mashna halveni. What does it mean so much? Amrle, no, well, but because if you say hashileni, loati lemichtav, he's not going to write it down. For two reasons. Rashi says the reason is that it's because a lashon of hashileni is generally short term, and therefore he doesn't feel it's something that he's going to forget. So if somebody would use halveni and ask to borrow your book, then you know you'll never see it again. But if he says hashileni, then he generally means, I'll give it back to you right after Shabbos, or when I finish reading it. So, okay, maybe that's the idea. If you say halveni, so then you're going to write it down. Tosfos says that the issue between them, Tosfos has got a very strong point, because Tosfos brings that there's a Gemara, Rashi talks about stam halva'ah shloshim yom, which is, Allah, somebody borrows money, you can't actually get it back for 30 days, unless you defined it differently at the time. So Tosfos brings a Gemara that shows that stam she'ela is also shloshim yom. And therefore, it's not really such a powerful raya as it seems, because obviously when it comes to she'ela, where the guy, you do have a right to ask for it back. It's just that you have a right to keep it for 30 days unless it's asked back. Okay. But in any event, Tosfos doesn't like that distinction, and he makes the more powerful distinction, which is that the lashon of she'ela means that the same item is coming back, as we pointed out in the Mishnah. The lashon of halva'ah is generally value-oriented. Lend me $100 doesn't mean I'm going to give you back this $100 bill. It means I'm going to be paying you back. So because of that, if you say halveni, it's generally a business deal. If you say hashileni, it's not a business deal. We're not looking at the value. We're just looking at the thing. So asks Rav Chanan, but that doesn't really make sense. I mean, I came into B'chol Zimna de Boila Memelei Halveni. Look, I mean, there's plenty of times that people are very loose with their language. They really want to say, lend me in terms of value, and they don't intend to give it back. So they will say hashileni. You know, so, I mean, somebody can borrow a bottle of milk and ask hashileni bakbuk chalav, even though that's absurd, because after you drank the milk, you're not going to be able to give it back to them. So they will use the word hashileni when they mean halveni, and, you know, I mean, lo kapi alei, he's not gonna be like, well, now listen here, I mean, you said hashileni, and that means you're trying to keep it for longer than I want to lend it. No, it's just like, he understands, it's just loose language. So then he might come to be writing it down, because he'll understand the real point was halveni, and he just said hashileni, and vice versa, you know? So Bishabat Nami Atila Michtav. So then if that's the case, if he would write it down Bechol, why won't he write it down on Shabbos? Said Abaya, you don't understand. The point isn't that the language itself is the safeguard. The point is your inability to use your normal language is the safeguard. That's the point. So in other words, since you know that you don't have your normal options of how you would speak, that means that you're already, whoa, we better be careful not to write things down. So if you're talking about Bechol, where it really doesn't matter, right? Whether you say halveni, it doesn't matter when you say hashileni. That's true, that lo kamdina lalei. Then he's asil mechta. But on Shabbos, kivan dashilenu desheri l'rabbonin, the rabbonin did not allow him to talk normally. They constrained his dibur. In constraining the dibur, they're already forcing an element of consciousness of the difference, and because of that, he won't come to bimata ktiva. So halveni lo shari l'so min kara milta. Now it becomes clear. And since it becomes clear, lo ati lamichtav, it's much less likely that he would come to write. Which, actually, because of the fact that this is like such a very, very small difference, right? I mean, this is, as the Gemara pointed out, you even Bechol would use one language or the other without being that makbid on it. And yet that enough, the insistence that it's one and not the other, is sufficient to change something that would normally be considered to be business intercourse, which might lead directly to ketiva. The small difference was enough for us to be happy with the fact that we've made enough of a difference for your consciousness. So, I mean, what that means, says Rava Baruch Chana Labaya, I mean, look, the Rabbanan are being very makbid on doing things a different way, right? So, Michti, I'm a Rabbanan kol mila. Let's say everything on Yontif, everything on Shabbos, whatever you're doing. And on Yontif, you got, in a sense, a bigger problem, because you're doing a lot of things on Yontif that on Shabbos would be mamash malachas, right? And it's very easy to like just forget and think, well, I mean, if I could do that, I could do this too. And one of those might be an actual still malacha on Yontif, maybe because it could have been done before Yontif, or whatever the various dinim are. So why, if they say in general that kamadev shalashanim shaninim, whenever we can make a difference, even if it's a small difference, we should make that difference. So how do you explain the fact that there's like things that we do that we just let people go about their normal business? We don't seem to be makpid on making these changes. So, for instance, you got people, the women are going down, filling up the buckets with water. That's like heavy-duty stuff, right? And there's no difference. So that's something you would never do on Shabbos, obviously, because it's Sar's Aser. So here it is on Yontif, and you're like walking out with your water, and isn't that likely to just cause you to forget that we're dealing with Yontif now and you'll get busy with the things that you're doing? So my time, Lo Mishaninon, why don't we make a difference? If we're going to make this kind of difference, shouldn't we make that kind of difference? Says Abaya, because when you make a difference, you can't make things worse than it was before. It has to be a difference that doesn't have a unintended consequences that could be just as damaging, if not worse, because there's nothing you can do. Tell me what you can do. Let's say, Echilavit, okay? You're going to say, well, if she is usually using a large bucket to bring water home, so then she should, on Yontif, she should use a small bucket. But if she uses a small bucket, that means she has to go 3 or 4 times to do something she would have done one time. So then you're actually wrecking the Yontif. You're making it more like Chol. She's doing more work, more tircha. So, I mean, that doesn't make sense, right? So how come Afshe Ba'alicha? If you're telling me if she usually takes water in a small bucket, which makes her go back and forth 3 or 4 times, let her take a big bucket. So Limalo Bechatz Barabba, that way she won't have to be walking so much on Yontif. So then come Afshe B'Masos, and she's doing much more work, and then she feels like it's really cold, okay? What do you think we should do? Should we take maybe a towel and put it over the bucket so that she should feel like, well, this is something that I don't want to show, that, you know, I'm just doing what I would normally do. You never know what's in there. You can't do that either, because what if the towel gets wet and then she squeezes it out, okay? So then she's going to be coming to do Sechita. If you say, all right, so put a lid on it. Don't put a towel over it. Just put a regular lid on it. No, because look, what happens if the lid falls off? So say, well, tie it with a string. What happens if the string tears? So the string tears, then she might come to retie it. So whatever it is, stupid idiots with their anti-Netanyahu, therefore, there's really nothing much that you can do. So, Enochinami, if there was something we could have done, we would have done. Tanat. I got another issue, okay? There's things that we do make a takana about to avoid whatever. Here's another interesting takana. We're worried about binyan or about makabu patish, okay? So, some of the things that we did, we had a lot of issues like that. For instance, going swimming. So we were worried about Shema Yitaken Klishayat, right? We have the same kind of issue when it comes to music. So we're worried about you're doing things that are musical because maybe you will be Metaken a Klishir. So that's another thing. So they said, for instance, Tanan. So we have in Lagab, this is Lagabi, it's a mission in Beitza, Lagabi Yontav, but it's the same halacha. V'lo misapkin, v'lo metapchim, v'lo merakdim b'yomtov. So you're not allowed. Rashi learns that the mesapkin and metapchim are an acting out of avelut, and that it has nothing to do with the question of Shema Yitaken. Only the thing about dancing has to do with Shema Yitaken. Tosfos disagrees very vehemently and learns that what we're talking about over here is various things that you do, clapping your hands, doing all kinds of fancy dances by clapping against your thighs, or a regular dance. So you do these things, and these things generally want you to get musical accompaniment. And the musical accompaniment may be involved with turning on the stereo or making a musical instrument. So because of that, we asked it. Now, I don't know, but I don't know about you, but everywhere I look, people are dancing on Shabbos, people are banging on the table on Shabbos, and people are sitting there in shul, banging on the bima like a bunch of idiots, making, you know, rhythms and so on. All of those things are mamish usur, and I've never seen anybody say anything and tell people, how could you be doing this? It's an isser. Now, how do you explain that? I mean, if it's really serious. So Abaye says, look, just because nobody complains about it doesn't mean that it's mutter. I mean, is that your question? I'm assuming you're saying how could we seriously claim that we made takanas about not coming to Uvda Dechol and so on and so forth if nobody listens? So I got to tell you something. The fact that nobody listens, and the more surprising fact that nobody complains about nobody listens, doesn't prove anything, because it's a very important halacha. For instance, let me ask you something. Didn't we have before, remember Rava said, don't sit at the edge of your mavoi, because if you're reading a newspaper and it rolls out, you will not realize that you're at the edge of a Rishus HaRabim, and you're actually sitting in Rishus HaYachid, and you'll bend down and you'll bring your newspaper back in, and then you're going to be over on Nisa D'Oraisa, right? So remember that? How many times did you see anybody complaining about people sitting at the end of a mavoi? It's unheard of. They'd probably arrest you if you tried to complain about that, right? So even though he said, we always see people that, especially the people that are taking the buckets, and they take a bucket to sit on, and it's exactly what they said, and nobody says anything to it. And how do you explain that? So obviously something is going on over here. We have to define when it is that we say something and when it is that we don't say something. So the point over here is that obviously you do not say something to people who are not going to listen. That's the point. And in order to say something, you just make things worse. You don't make things better. And therefore, it's better that the people should not even realize how wrong they are. At least that way they can be shaken again. Whereas if you tell them, they're still going to do it, but that way they'll be made see them. So in the same way that I explained to you that sometimes doing things differently makes things worse and not better, the same thing is true about complaining about the way that people are doing things wrongly. Therefore, we say, Hanachli Yisrael, so don't let B'nai Yisrael do what they're doing, because it's mutav shir shogegin v'ayu mizidin. Better that they should be doing things without a commitment than that they should be committed to doing something wrong. Now, so sovereignty, so initially we assumed that obviously that only would apply to a drabbanan, right? I mean, we're certainly not going to be mavater on the mitzvah of tochacha. I mean, if it's a chi of the araisa. You see, I understood what you mean is that when the Rabbana make a takana, so they make the takana in such a way that it shouldn't be goring people to do more isurim. Okay, that makes sense if it's a takana the Rabbana. But if we're talking about doing an isur d'oraisa, and you see someone doing an isur d'oraisa, so obviously you have to tell, I mean, isn't that part of the mitzvah of tochacha, right? So I would have to tell them. That's what we thought. But b'oraisa, hello, this thing doesn't apply. But that is absolutely not the case. It makes no difference. And I'll prove it to you. Ever watch people eating Erev Yom Kippur? Okay, when do they stop eating? They're all looking at their watch, and oops, it's almost Shkia, we only have another 30 seconds. Hey, you're not allowed to eat till Shkia. There's a Chiyav D'Oraisa of Tosefet Yom HaKippurim. So how come nobody stops them? And that's an Issur D'Oraisa. So a Tosefet Yom HaKippurim is certainly a D'Oraisa, and we learn that out from the Pasuk, right? So nobody says anything. Everybody's eating to mamish the last minute, and nobody says anything. Okay, now Lamaisa, this is not as simple as it appears, because it only applies where mutav shishogig v'lo yom hazidim. So in other words, the example that we brought of Tosefet Yom HaKippurim is understood to be a very specific model for the halacha. These are things that nobody knows about. So there's those kinds of things which, like, it's shocking that nobody knows about it, you know. but people just don't know. They look at me like you're crazy. I never heard that. Well, like you'll find people that insist on carrying on Shabbos, you know, because what do you mean? We always carried on Shabbos. Now, the fact that they were living in a town with an Erev and now they're somewhere else completely, which is no Erev whatsoever, but whoever did such a thing? What, are you crazy? I'm not supposed to carry my purse on Shabbos. I mean, how many times have you heard that kind of thing for people, right? So that is something that we're talking about here. If it's a dover that's before some and people know about it, and it's just that it's gone into, in their minds, it's become heter, of course you do give tochacha for that. That's for sure. But we're talking about over here things that are poshut not known, and then the halacha of mutif shishogim v'lo yumezin him, then that applies. Now, the next thing that's interesting in the Mishnah is that it throws in another case. I'm not quite sure. What is the point of this other case? I mean, we talked about you can go in and you just make sure you use the word Ashileni. You make a cheshbon after Shabbos. I mean, that sort of covers it, right? So for some reason, we threw in another case. A woman can borrow loaves of bread and so on. I mean, but she also has to be careful not to say Halveni. So, I mean, that, what does that imply? It implies that the only problem of doing it in such a way, if she would say Halveni, it would be usur, because it's Shabbos. Yeah, but there's certainly not a thing I got to think about if it's during the week, right? So then it's Shapir Dam. It doesn't matter what lashon she uses, and it doesn't matter that essentially what she's going to be doing is she's going to be really, think about it. I mean, what's really happening is she's taking a bottle of milk, and she's paying back the bottle of milk with a different bottle of milk. Isn't that a problem? What happens if the price of milk changes? So if it's a long-term borrow, right? And we're making this difference between Halveni and Ashileni. I understand that if it's a short-term kind of thing, and it's specifically Ashileni, so then you could say, okay, so that implies she's going to give it back right after Shabbos. It's not going to be a change in the price of milk that we're going to be chayshish for within a day or two. But if it's during the week, where she could say Halveni as well, and that would mean that she can bring back the milk 30 days later, is that mutter? Would that mean that the Mishnah is going not like Hillel? Because remember, the Tanan, Hillel actually said that V'cheinaya Hillel Omer, who's chayshesh, what's called sa'a b'sa'a. The din of sa'a b'sa'a is that you cannot borrow something wheat, let's say, a bushel of wheat, and give them back. Say, I'm going to pay you back a bushel of wheat for a bushel of wheat. Why? Because the market on wheat is volatile. And because of that, what happens if you lent the guy? Because remember, what's really happening when you're lending him is you've sold it to him. I mean, it's just a nice way of saying it. I'm going to buy a bushel of wheat from you with a bushel of wheat, right? Okay, so is there a price for the bushel of wheat? I didn't say what the price is, but we understand that there's a price. The bushel of wheat this week may be $10. The bushel of wheat next week or next month when I pay it back may be $11. That means I'm going to be paying $11 for a $10 loan. Uh-oh. That's called ribis. Now, obviously, it's not ribis d'oraisa because it's not ketzutza, and it's not clear that it will be. But nonetheless, the Rabbanan asserted it. And because of this, Hillel says, forget about things like big issues of a sa'abis. I was over there, okay, really, it could make a serious difference. I'm talking about even borrowing challahs. You can't even borrow challahs. You would have to define what the challah is worth. So you could say, okay, lend me 10 cents worth of bread, and I will pay you back 10 cents worth of bread. That way you avoid the problem. We're not talking about Shabbos, obviously. So, achetel sena damim, because you're going to have to turn it into an evaluation, shema yukru chitim, because what if the price of wheat goes up? V'nimtzu ba'ot lidei ribit, and that way they're going to be over on, even though this is not ribis ketzutza, but they will be over in the takon d'rabbanan of sa'a b'sa'a. The Mishnah is saying the only problem is on Shabbos. There's no problem of doing this during the week. Says the Gemara, Afilu Temil, works out very, very well, according to Hillel. Because, look, remember, when you're talking about a bottle of milk, or you're talking about a loaf of bread, very often, those are controlled commodities, and they do not depend on the price of wheat, and they do not depend on the particular fluctuations in the availability of milk in a particular week. They're government controlled, and because of that, there's not a chashash. And that's the difference. In other words, Hillel was talking about Be'ato Delokitz Dame. He was talking about a place without government controls. There's no set price. And because of that, there's constant fluctuations. But over here, we're talking about a normal situation in which the type of things that you borrow between neighbors are things that are not going to fluctuate in price, even though the raw material will fluctuate. Okay, next thing we said is that, and if the guy doesn't trust you, so then leave your talis there, leave your watch there, whatever, right? Now, the problem is, what would be the din if, in fact, you went ahead and you made one of these loans or purchases on Shabbos and on Yontav, and there's plenty of ways to do that beheter. In other words, you said Ashileni and so on, and now you're not paying. So, I mean, can the guy sue you and say, listen, he really bought it, he just said Ashileni, and I mean, like, or like, is the very fact that it was made on Yontav mean it's not a business deal and therefore he can't sue you? Well, itmar, sumachlokes. Halva'at Yom Tov, somebody who makes this halva'at, either Shabbos or Yontav, which is that was discussed over here in terms of Yontav, Rabbi Yosef says you cannot go to court on it. The court refuses to get involved. You're going to have to persuade the guy to pay you. Because otherwise, we'll see, we're turning it back into business. Whereas Rabba says, no, it's absolutely recoverable in court. And I'll tell you why, says Rav Yosef. I say, lo nitna li tava. Because, I mean, lamaisa, if the guy is looking at this as an issue that is ultimately possibly going to end up in court, then what's the first thing that he does? He writes it down, right? So your takana of saying the word Ashileni instead of Halveni, if the whole focus of the person that is giving it is how am I going to get my money? And this, of course, the reason we're bringing this up is gufa because of the Eitzah of the Mishnah to leave your talis, which seems to be addressing this problem, as we'll see in a moment. But if you tell me that it is recoverable in court, so then you're opening the door to the very thing that you wanted to avoid. I mean, you're trying to avoid writing it down, right? So then he's Osi L'Mikhtav, whereas Rabbah says, wait. Remember, the whole reason that we're being matir this and the way we're trying to avoid the ufta dechol is to make sure that you can live on Yontav and Shabbos without being driven crazy by the halachas. So what is a person supposed to do if they don't have anything to eat or they don't have the bottle of milk and their kids are crying? I mean, what are they supposed to do? The only thing that we allow them to do over here is basically buy the milk on Yontav and Shabbos in a way that is not going to come lidei ksiva. Well, if you're going to tell the people you can't recover it in court, who the heck is going to be dumb enough to lend them a bottle of milk? Or what makolet is going to allow the guy to walk off with a bottle of milk because he's honest? So they won't let you. So then you're destroying the whole point. I mean, the whole point is we want people to be able to have the Simchas Yontav and the Shabbos. So then they won't be able to live normally. Okay, says the Gemara, I mean, our Mishnah seems to be dealing with this issue. The Mishnah says, if the guy who has the milk, or the kikrot, or whatever it is, in Eino Ma'amino, we're talking about the Korban Pesach, then leave your talis so that he can collect it. Now, I mean, if you're going to tell me that there'd be no way for the guy to recover it in the court, so now I understand why you want to leave your talis, because he knows he can't recover it, so he's not going to lend it to you or give you your Korban Pesach. So, and then, in order to get your watch back, you'll have to come back after Shabbos, and then you'll make a cheshbon, right? But if you're telling me, well, anyway, he'd be able to take you to court. So what do you have to believe the talis? I mean, the guy knows that if you don't pay up, he'll take you to court. So then he would be able to give him whatever he is, and if the guy doesn't want to pay, he'll go to court. That's ridiculous. I mean, obviously people don't want to go to court. So the guy will say, listen, forget it. I am not interested in getting involved in litigation. Are you nuts? I'm going to have to go there, waste my time in the court, maybe pay a lawyer and select a dayan and have the dayan tell me, no, I'm too busy, find somebody else. Well, you've got to be crazy. So I'm not interested. So because the Mishnah is just telling you what to do in order to make sure that you're able to get what it is that you need, and it still should not be considered to be a business deal, even though it looks like an exchange of a talis for a bottle of milk and so on, that even that's mutter. That's perfectly reasonable. Masiv Raviti Baravin, okay, what about this? Ashochet Tapara. v'chilka b'rosh Hashanah. Okay, so a guy basically shechs a cow, right? And what happens is usually, until very recently, you could only shech the cow when you had people that were taking parts of it. I mean, what are you going to do with it otherwise? There's no refrigeration. So you're giving it out to your friends, right? So he was giving out to these people that he would normally be giving it out to, and they're going to be paying him afterwards, right? Now the question is, what happens if it's the Rosh Hashanah of the year right after Shemitah? Now that could be a disaster, because if it really was Rosh Hashanah, which you're never really sure about, right? Unless you have a calendar that's kavua. But, I mean, at the time that you're keeping now the dinim of Shemitah of Yovel that are going to be canceling your debts, it's not a smart thing to do to give the people the cow and to have the guy walk off with the steak, because then you will not be able to get the steak back if it turns out that what you thought was Rosh Hashanah was really the last day of Elul, because Elul was Me'uber and there were no Edim that had shown up in time to be able to make the Chodesh really Rosh Hashanah. So what they used to do is they kept the day as Rosh Hashanah, thinking that the Edim are going to come. But if the Edim didn't come, then that day turns out to be Chol, and then the next day is Rosh Hashanah. So now you got a problem, because Imaya Chodesh Me'ubar, if it turns out that Elul actually had 30 days, and the day that you thought was Rosh Hashanah was actually the last day of Elul, forget it, baby. You can't get your money back, because it's the last day of Shemitah, and the last day of Shemitah is the day that cancels your loans. So therefore, it would be Meshameh. But if it turned out that Elul was really only 29 days, which means that today is Rosh Hashanah, so that it's the next year, so then it will not be Meshameh. Now, I mean, how do you explain this if you hold like Rav Yosef? If anyway you cannot go to court to recover a loan that was made on Rosh Hashanah, because that's what he says, so what's the difference if it's Shemitah or it's not Shemitah? Anyway, you're up the river without a paddle, right? Because you can't go to court. So, and if it was Shemitah, also you couldn't go to court. So it makes absolutely no difference, which means that Rabbi Yosef must be wrong, because he knows Nitna Litaba. So then, my Mishamet, there's nothing there for it to be canceled. It's canceled. You can't recover it anyway. No, wait a second. You're forgetting something. If it turns out that the day it was 30 days, right? So then that means that the day that you made the loan wasn't Yontif. It was actually Chol. And if it's Chol, then you could have gone to court. But now you can't go to court because it was the last day of Shemitah. So it still works out. The fact that you thought maybe it's Yontif, that wasn't what Rabbi Yosef was referring to, as Tosas explained. Rabbi Yosef wasn't saying, well, if it was made on a day you thought was Yontif, you can't go to court. Of course you can go to court. It wasn't Yontif. So that doesn't prove anything. Okay, fine. Read the next piece of the mission, okay? Because it's still the same idea. The next piece of the mission says, but if not, like we said, so then if Elo wasn't 30 days and instead it was Chaser, so then it would not be canceled, obviously, because it's the beginning of the next year. I don't understand. What's the difference? If you're going to tell me that you can go to court, even though it was done on Yontif, it was a deal that was done on Rosh Hashanah, okay, then it's very important for me to know that the Shemitah was not Meshameh, right? But if you're going to tell me what Rabbi Yosef says, that anyway you're not going to be able to go to court, so I understand. What are you telling me? The Mishnah says Shemitah is not Meshameh? What do you mean it's not Meshameh? There's no debt that you could collect anyway, so there's nothing to be Meshameh. Shemitah is not Meshameh, the debt is Meshumat. No. That's technically speaking, yes, you're right, but in reality, let's say if the guy gives you the money. So if the guy gives you the money, it really is shamut, right? That means you can't go to court. But if the guy gives you the money, it means not that you can go to court. What it means is that he does not say, I'm not taking it. That's the point. Whereas if it was Shemitah, so then he would need to tell the guy, listen, I'm sorry, but I can't take the money you owe me because it's Shemitah. What are you saying? And so you're telling me in the other case where it turned out that it was the last day of Elul, that the guy's not allowed to take the money if the person wants to pay him the money? He's allowed to take the money if the person pays him the money. I mean, that's the halacha. Miklal, the resh, what's the thing? The first case that he yoiv lelo shakal, even if the guy pays you back the money from the last day of the year that he took his piece of the steak, so you're not allowed to take the steak, the money for the steak? It's ridiculous. Of course you are. You're allowed to accept it. No, but see, the difference is that where it says that Shemitah was Meshameit, it means that you have to tell the guy who's giving you the money, you have to tell him, look, this money is not mine. I am Meshameit the debt because it was Shemitah. And then if the guy says, okay, I understand, but I'm not comfortable with that, and I want to pay you for the stake that I took, so then you can take it, because we learned it out from Zedvar HaShemitah. You need to say it, Shemitah. You don't need to deny the money. In the Seifa, on the other hand, you don't even have to say, Meshameit ani. The guy pays you, he pays you. He owes you the money anyway. That's the point, because it wasn't Shemitah. Kiditznan, and this is very clear from the Mishnah in Shviyas, Hamachazir chov b'shviyit, somebody who repays you, you should say to him, Meshameit ani. Look, I'm canceling this loan. And if he says, I don't care, I understand that, but I'm not comfortable keeping the money that I borrowed from you, I want to give it to you. So then you can take it. But it's enough for you to have said, as far as I'm concerned, it's canceled because of Shemitah. Mishum shenemar v'ze devar ha-Shemitah. It's Dibur that's important. It's the recognition of it's being Shemitah. Whatever the interrelationship between you is in terms of the person feeling better paying you, that's your personal business. Rav Avya, actually, if he would do this kind of thing, somebody wanted to so-called borrow or take something from him on Yontev, he didn't trust the guy. He would always insist that the guy would leave his talis without saying, I need a mashkin, but he would take a mashkin. Rabbi Barula didn't want to do that because it was too close to business. But what he would do is he would play a little game, and he would marry me rume that right after Yontev, he would go over to the guy and ask the guy to borrow something. And then he wouldn't give it back until the guy gave back what he had said that he was going to borrow. Okay, but the idea is the same. B'chein Erev Pesach, the next thing that we found in the Mishnah, is that if Pesach comes out on a Sunday, so then that means that the day of the Akrovas HaKorban is on Shabbos. So it says you can take your Korban Pesach, you leave your talis with the guy. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, you know, you're actually allowed to, normally you're not allowed to say this is Kodesh on Shabbos. Not to take Trumas, Baisers, Kochim, and so on and so forth, for the same reason, because it's also, it's part of buying and selling. But in this case, it's Mutter, because since it's something that you have to do today, so because of that, you're allowed to even be Magdish it. And if it's Yontev, and you need to bring a Korban Chagiga, and you didn't bring the Chagin, buy your Chagiga yesterday, so for the same reason, even though you could say Chagiga, you can bring another day, but it's a mitzvah, so because today is the day you're going to bring it, there's no iser in being makdish it. So says the Gemara. Isn't that what the Mishnah is saying? It says over here, v'chein erev Pesach b'Yerushalayim, shechal liyot b'Shabbos, leave your talis, miniach talito, etzlo v'notelot b'scho, v'osei melchesh b'malach yontem. So apparently you're buying a Korban Pesach today. It's Shabbos. You didn't have it before to say that it was Kodesh, right? So it must be that you're being Magashed and you're bringing it as a Korban. So, obviously Rabbi Yochanan is right. The Mishnah says so b'Feirish. It says the Gemara, absolutely not. Absolutely not. What it might be referring to is a very normal case where one guy is bringing a Korban Pesach. The halacha is that until it's actually time to bring the Korban, people can come and join you as menuyim on the Korban. So let's say the Korban is big enough for 20 people. You figured people would come along. You were bringing it on your own. Somebody comes over on Yontev and says, can I join up, please? Yes, you can join up. Leave your talis is basically what the guy's going to have to do, though, right? If you don't trust him. Okay, but then you're not going to be Magdish the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach was already Kodesh from before. It's just that you're getting a chelek in an extant Korban Pesach. Maybe that's what it's referring to. Where does it necessarily apply in the Mishnah that just because you can buy a Korban Pesach means you can be Magdish the Korban Pesach? It's not the same. Because what we could learn is that we're talking about a case where he's getting other people as menuyim to be Korban Mikdash Vekai. It was already Kodesh from before. Doesn't prove anything. Well, Well, I mean, didn't we learn before? I mean, not here, but in Masechet Beitza, it says in a Mishnah, "Ein nimnim ala beima betchila biyontiv." I mean, how you're not helping things. I mean, it says over there you're not allowed to be monui on an animal bechlal. We're not talking about a korban. I mean, but bechlal, you're not allowed to have a piece of the action because it needed to be done in terms of refrigeration. You're not allowed to take a case. So that would be considered, how could that be not be considered business? Because, I mean, if you're keeping a record of who's on there and so on, I mean, then you're really going to have a problem of writing, right? I mean, I don't understand how we would be matir being mamana someone on a Pesach and expect not to come lidei ktiva. That's different, okay? We were talking about here, when you're getting your Korban Pesach, we're talking about where you, every year you do this. So the guy knows exactly who's his chabura. Something like a matzah chabura. We get together every year. That must be what the Mishnah is talking about. Or, I mean, otherwise it'd be a stira to the Mishnah Beitza, possibly. I mean, maybe there's other reasons, maybe because of the mitzvah. I don't know. But I mean, it's very easy to say that we're talking about over here that it's kamandi imni bami karatami. So over here, it's as if he was there for before because we already had set aside, we have a list of the people that are there. Okay. But I mean, you're saying that it's possible to learn the sugyas and the mishnayas and the brisa not like Rabbi Yochanan? I don't think so. What about the brisa that Rav Hoshaya brought? A guy can go to a shepherd and the guy knows him and notein la talela pischo, the shepherd gives him a lamb. He's going to use it for his Korban Pesach and the buyer will then be magdisho. Ha ha ha. Magdisho means that he's going to say hareze kodesh for Korban Pesach, right? So it's beferish saying exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. Not necessarily, says the Gemara. Even that case may be a case of what we said before. Let me ask you something. Why does it say haragil etzlo? What's the nafkamina? If it's ragil etzlo or not ragil etzlo, it says ragil etzlo. It means it's a ro'er that knows you from before. Okay, that's what I think the point is. Namely, that kivan de ragil etzlo, the shepherd knows that this is part of the way the chabura deals every year, that they always come and get the Korban Pesach from him. So he was already magdish it from before, set it aside to be a Korban Pesach, and now he's waiting for the people that are going to buy into the Korban Pesach to come to him. What do you mean? But it says he can be magdish it. What's with you? Well, magdish katan, he says you can buy it and then be magdish it. So obviously he was a magdish it before. Not necessarily. Because what that could mean is hegdesh iloi midrabana. In other words, for somebody else that had been magdish my Korban Pesach is very nice, and technically speaking, it's already kodesh, I understand, but there's an inyan that the bialim should be magdish. So when you become the bialim, the rabbana want you to be magdish. Anyway, therefore you can do that. But that's not the same as the isra, the general isra of being magdish. That's taking something that was chol and turning it into hegdesh, and that is a business deal. Now, wait a minute. You're telling me Rabbi Yochanan said that you're allowed to be magdish a korban on Shabbos and on Yontif? Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan always pass kind of like a stam Mishnah, Vitnan, and it says, beferish in the Mishnah, lo magdishim, velo marichin, velo machrimim, velo magbin trumas umaisras, kol elo biyontev, kalvachomre b'shabbos. So it says over here, it is absolutely usur to do any of those things, including being magdish behima. So what are you telling me? He's going against the Stam Mishnah. I thought he always passed like a Stam Mishnah. That's the whole point, guys. Lokasha, we introduced the whole sugya with pointing out the difference of this case and other cases. Kan bechovotchika vualemzman. When he's saying you can be magdish, it's because that carbon has to be brought today. So whether we're talking about the chagiga that you're going to be bringing or you're talking about the Korban Pesach, then obviously we're back to the same issue of dispensations. It has to be done today. We make it possible for you to do it today. The other mission that says stam, that you don't do any of these things like Egdash, Erech, and Charomim, Trumas, Mises, or anything else that has to do with an exchange of a situation for a new din, either because of Tikkun or because of Ksiva, that it's similar to Masim Amatan, depending on what case we're talking about. Those are not Kavulim's, man. So kan bechavot shel eino kavur lemzman, and over there, of course, Rav Yochanan Paskins, like the Stam Mishnah. Okay, gentlemen, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Hine el Yeshua si eftach v'lo efchad. Phew, I try anyway. It's an awful lot to be frightened of. Okay, we do our best. So have a great week. Only besirot tovot, bezrat Hashem, and we'll see you tomorrow, regular time.